And we're back. The MacGuffin Men have returned from their paint job tour of the southern United States. Before we get started, you can check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We most recently talked about Traffic, a Steven Soderbergh film. And before that was The Lobster, Rush Hour, and Jackie Chan's career a little bit, La La Land at the end of the tour. I also wrote a bunch of things before we went away. Most recently about Run the Jewels and their most recent album. And a variety of things about some of the Oscar movies, including one of the ones, or the one that we'll be talking about today. Anyway, themacguffinmen.com. Follow us on Twitter, at themacguffinmen. And that's it. Theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, we're back. We're back to the theme song.
Yeah, you're bringing your high energy for this movie.
Oh yeah, I'm coming in hot.
a movie that definitely deserves some high energy.
This movie redefines high energy.
we're talking about Jackie, which, as you said, is out there for the Oscar. Some Oscar love.
Not nearly as much as it should. But
you don't think so?
Did this get nominated for Best Picture?
I just know that Natalie Portman got nominated.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, she's on her way to being one of the Streep lights, you know, that she'll just get nominated for a bunch of things all the time.
But you don't think this is getting enough love? People seem to like it.
Yeah, it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. I just looked it up. It was nominated for Best Performance by a Leading Actress, Costume Design, obviously, and The Score, which I think is a totally deserved nomination. I don't know. It's just, I think it's a little too weird. It's too weird for the Academy. If you made it like a straight biopic about Jackie Kennedy, I think it would do much better at the Oscars than this, which is more like a biopic by way of Hitchcock, you know?
Yeah, it's Oscar bait on paper, but it's not, I think you're right. It's not handled in a way that is just going for the most, you know, melodramatic historical kind of interpretation that would be most likely to get awards.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is a big part of the reason why I like this movie as much as I did the first time I saw it, just because, I mean, it is well documented on the 274 episodes of this podcast that biopics are kind of boring to me. And but I also find the idea of looking at a human life interesting, like a real life of a famous person interesting. And what this movie is able to do is be a biopic that doesn't remind me of other biopics, you know?
Okay, so how do they do that?
Well, I mean, the big thing, and this is a good trick in making a biopic, is making it about a very small period of time. That helps things a lot, because the whole womb to tomb thing is so played out. So that's the main thing. And also just the fractured narrative of this movie, or just, I guess, the fracture. There's not a ton of narrative in this movie. Just the fractures in the construction of the film. The timeline is never really totally clear. It just sort of feels like you are floating through the air that it is this movie, and you don't ever quite know where you are because the clouds are really thick. And then at the end, you just see a director credit, and you're just like, oh, that was a movie. And it was a great movie. And now I have to piece it together in my brain. You know, like Pablo Larraín, the director of this movie, I was reading an interview with him, and he sort of compared it to the movie to Cubism in some capacity, and just the idea that if you look at one part of this movie, it looks it feels different from like another part of this movie, and then when you look at the whole, it looks even different from both of those things, you know. And there's this real sort of just this feeling of uncertainty, I guess, that runs throughout the movie. Where, I mean, I can't remember when things happen in this movie, even though I've seen this movie a few times. The order of events never totally locks in my head. Just because of the way that the movie moves, you know,
and that it's not important.
Yeah. Also, yes, exactly. I mean, it's important for thematic reasons. The placement of scenes, obviously, but you are right that, you know, the order things actions happen in isn't super important, you know. You know the main action that happened, and everything else is conversation about it. So Yeah, I don't know. It's just such a bizarre movie. It is such a bizarre movie that I like a lot. It was clearly put together in the editing room, which is a type of movie I've shown affinity for. Like it really reminded me of The Limey, Steven Soderbergh's movie, where they shot the script one way and then totally changed it in the editing room, probably to the screenwriter's chagrin. Lem Dobbs, in the case of The Limey, which is well documented on a commentary track where he talks shit about Steven Soderbergh for 82 minutes. And Noah Oppenheimer, I can't imagine this movie's screenplay looks like would give most people, like if you were to read the screenplay, I can't imagine most people would think of the movie that ended up being made with it, you know, because it's clear that a lot of scenes are shot multiple times in multiple locations and just sort of cut together. The John Hurt stuff, most obviously, and it just, I don't know, and I think that really adds to this feeling of where the hell am I that exists constantly, which is exactly what Jackie's trying to figure out for the whole movie, is like, who am I and where am I now, you know, where is my placement, what is my placement in this world?
Yeah, and I was trying to touch on that a little bit when I said it looks like Oscar bait on paper. To go with what you're saying, that Noah Oppenheimer wouldn't have thought that this was the way this turns out. It really is, a director and an editor and a cinematographer and the person doing the score that all come together to make this something different than what you would expect.
Yes, absolutely. And I also don't want to discredit Noah Oppenheimer, because I think it kind of sounds like I did. But like the idea for this movie is great, you know, and just the idea of focusing on the small period in Jackie Kennedy's life is really, really cool. And then but what everybody after the writing stage did with it, I think really elevates the movie.
Yeah. And so why do you say it's kind of a biopic by way of Hitchcock?
Well, I mean, it just feels like a mystery, especially since like the first moment of this movie is before we even see a visual past the various production companies that made the movie, their logos. We just hear the score for about 10 seconds. And it's this very classical type of score, but also sounds terrifying. You know, it sounds like there's always dread just around the corner. And that's what a lot of this movie feels like. And the way that the score is so repetitive, it's just this looming dread that exists in Jackie's life. And so, you know, we get the score before we even see any visuals. And this score runs throughout the movie and is, I say repetitive, I don't mean it in a bad way, because I think the score is great. And even towards the end, it gets even more terrifying sounding when they start adding some bass elements when around the time when JFK's coffin is getting lowered into the ground. So, yeah, just right there, you sort of are like, this is just this off-putting music that feels more at home in a mystery movie than it does in a biopic. And again, like I said, this movie kind of is like a biopic as a mystery. Yeah,
and I think you're right. A lot of it comes from the music, the sense of dread that I think is everywhere. But that's what I want to talk to you about. I mean, there is a feeling of dread all over the place in the way things are shot. The music, I think, is number one, but the way things are shot, a couple other filmmaking techniques add to that. But the main event, I mean, about Jackie Kennedy's life here is, her husband being assassinated and having to deal with it. But the assassination comes out of nowhere. I mean, she doesn't know it's coming. So what is that feeling of dread really relate to?
Well, it relates to her life post-assassination. It's this, again, it's who am I and what is my purpose in this world now? Which I think is the question that runs throughout the movie is, Jackie Kennedy, even in the flashbacks, trying to figure out who she is and where she fits in this world, and then her trying to figure out who she is and where she fits in this new, way more depressing world.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that's sort of where it comes from. Like the music, you know, let's say this music exists in Jackie Kennedy's head. It's music that exists after the assassination. It's not a movement she would have written in October 1963, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You said you do like the framing device, though, with the interview taking place and then kind of having the kind of mixed up narrative after that?
Absolutely.
What is it about that you like so much?
I mean, there's so many elements. I mean, like one of the things that I love about this movie is just the fact that it is so so head-on about a woman crafting her own legacy and her husband's legacy now that her husband can't craft his own legacy anymore. And just the way that it plays with the media and shows that, you know, in a time like 2017 where we always assume celebrities are constructing their own image at all times, just the way that we have sort of started to accept media figures, the way that it shows how some of the famous most famous people of the 1960s were already doing that 50 years ago. And I find that really interesting, just the way that it sort of pairs with it sort of, you know, looks at history the way that we look at modern times. You know, we look at modern famous people. I enjoy the way that it's not even just like one framing device. It's sort of like a framing device inside a framing device where we also get the television tour of the White House interspersed with parts of the interview. And it's just, it gives us all of these different ways to look at Jackie, and who I will frequently refer to as Jackie, even though I know she that I should be calling her Jackie Kennedy at all times, but that's what the movie has done to my brain. So, you know, we have her, the way she sees herself in when she's actually honest with Billy Crudup, who I forget what he's credited as, but I know it's not a real name. And the way that she then says things that she will actually allow him to print. And then when we get these cuts to the television interview, when she's at her most, performative, I guess, where she's putting on an act for the whole country and is a visual act where everybody will get to see her. Whereas this piece of media in print people will at least have to paint their own pictures. You know, it's just the different levels of construction that exists throughout this movie. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, and do you think they do walk a line? I mean, because I've reading reviews about this, some people seem to think that it tries to be two movies at once. The people who don't like it as much, at least, seem to think it's partially a movie about this individual, you know, about Jackie Kennedy and about a specific widow and, you know, now single mother and public figure, and it's also a movie about myth making and the idea that, you know, the lives that we live aren't nearly as important as the kind of the legacy that we leave.
Yeah.
But do you think the movie is successful in kind of having it both ways and talking about both of those in an engaging way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I think every conversation in this movie is fascinating. I think every conversation with Billy Crudup's character is fascinating. I think all the stuff with John Hurt is amazing. although he takes a very, for a man of the cloth, takes a decidedly non-1960s look at the world. But I mean, that sort of that disconnect, it helps make it interesting too, because you would just expect him to say boring things like the God has a plan sort of thing, which is absolutely not what he says in his scenes. Also, it's great to get some surprise John Hurt towards the end of the movie, which I had no idea was happening. You know, I just think this movie, top to bottom, and even the stuff with Bobby Kennedy, Sarsgaard, Peter Sarsgaard, the when they're talking about the legacy and his fears about how they could have done so much and now, you know, now LBJ gets to knock down the pins that they set up. All that stuff I think is so cool, and it's just like just a logical way to think about how these people would be viewing their lives in the days after this. And even like these little moments of reality that aren't really related to legacy so much as just like Jackie and JFK's marriage, where there's this point where she says, you know, the man wouldn't stop it or would pay whatever it took to get a vote, but he would balk at buying a nice painting. And it's just like JFK's dead and she's still just like, these are things that annoyed you about your husband, but they still annoy you even though he's dead. You know, you miss him, but you can still be annoyed by his ideas. And there's just so many things in this movie that in, you know, in a situation that I will never even come close to experiencing, just feel like they ring in both the myth making and the my loved one, the president was just murdered sort of way. Like, they're just both so interesting and they just feel right. Like, these assumptions that that the screenwriter and director are making about the way that people think. They just feel like human reactions to these situations, you know?
Yeah, that I think that's a good example that you bring up about him, about Jackie mentioning, you know, him kind of getting on her about how she spends money. I mean, this assassination is such a you know, world-changing event and such a global event, but with ramifications for everybody involved and, you know, kind of the whole globe. But yeah, you forget that this is someone you spent so much time with, and that the moment they die, all your feelings don't go away and they still have this personality. And I think that's sort of the more personal level that this movie keeps under all these, you know, much bigger things.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just like these realistic things of her, you know, clearing the family's things out of the White House, just all of these little things that I think add up to sort of make this. It really does a lot of times feel like a movie about a woman that has lost her husband. And like, it's weird because, as you said, the Jackie, like, description of Jackie makes it sound like Oscar bait. And I think the description of this movie, if she's not Jackie Kennedy, she's just a woman whose husband got murdered, is also total Oscar bait. You know, it's just like this woman with this crushing grief that she has to deal with. And somehow, somewhere in the combination of these two things, it turns into this weird, bizarre movie that is, you know, off-putting for people. And I totally understand why. But I also think it's a really, really, really good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know that movie you're describing of just those things you have to figure out when somebody dies, you know, just when the funeral is going to be, how we're going to do it, you know, what music should be played, what people can we invite with this amount of space, you know, those things are handled. But then,
and then her breaking down crying a few times while that's happening, you know, like you can just see it happening in your head. Yeah,
and explaining it to her children, you know, her very young children. But then we have that, you know, times 1,000, because she's not just planning it at a funeral home, you know, on the other side of town. It's this public thing, and there's security concerns, and, you know, there's world leaders coming. So it is that story, but it's also this other, you know, much larger story. And it's, you know, everything's just under a microscope, you know, and I think that obviously comes up with the constant close-ups in this movie. There's the way that, you know, any widow, a lot of people are going to be seeing her a lot and talking about her. I mean, a extremely recent widow like this movie depicts. You know, you're kind of a very public figure in your little life, and then you make that the first lady of a very popular president, and you have all those things, as I said, just so magnified.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to talk about the camera work a little bit? I mean, I mentioned the amount of close-ups. I don't know if you had anything more on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just so much. Like, there are a lot of really smart decisions in the camera work in this movie. I like the way that I do like that the camera's right in people's faces all the time. I don't know. There's just something about it that was interesting. And I mean, they shot this movie on 16mm film in an effort to help blend the footage that they were shooting with archival footage that they were using, which is, I mean, I think smart. And you can tell just because the archival footage is archival footage, and you can always tell. But I think that was a smart decision as far as helping it blend. But yeah, the idea with the wide angle lenses, they use such wide angle lenses, like a lot of 14 millimeter lens work in this movie, which is what was done on The Revenant as well, with a lot of handheld camera work and a lot of a very wide lens right in a person's face. Like, it's amazing how close Natalie Portman's face is to the camera, probably. And yeah, you know, towards the end when her and John Hurt are having a conversation, they're so close together, like comically close together. I bet they're even closer together than you anticipate, just because of the way that lens would work, to sort of expand the space. But just the idea that Lorraine and cinematographer Stéphane Fontaine had was to be able to show most specifically Jackie's face in a close-up, but also have the lens be wide enough that you could see parts of the world behind her, parts of her environment behind her. And that's not to say that this entire movie exists right directly in front of a face, like 2 inches in front of a face. You know, the majority of the crud-up and Jackie scenes are, you know, pretty mid shots, despite the fact that they're staring right at each other the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so, when the choice is made, it is so prominent that you remember it as something that is just constant in this movie. But yeah, just the wide angle to sort of show this person, this face in the center of things, but also to see that there is an environment around her that she has to think about. And one of the few times when they break from that idea, the idea of trying to stay as wide as possible, is when LBJ is being sworn in on Air Force One. They use a longer lens in that scene to sort of make Jackie stand out from the world that she's in a bit more, like to sort of, because the longer the lens, the shallower the depth of field is going to be, and so you just see less in the background. It just gets blurrier behind you, and they just wanted to make her look like she was lost in this place, as opposed to existing within this environment, which she had been, you know, an hour before.
Yeah, and just that the how quickly she feels so separate from this, you know, when she says, I'm not the first lady anymore, or, you know, they're already talking about him like he's a dusty artifact or something. Yeah. Just how quickly everything changes for her. And the close-ups are, to me, it's because this is clearly Jackie's movie. I mean, it's the amount of screen time she gets, the fact that the title of the movie is just called Jackie.
Yeah.
It's so clearly hers. And I love the lack of JFK in this. I mean, he has a few lines, you see him a few times. Obviously, a lot of this movie takes place after the assassination, but not all of it. And there's just so little talk about him. You know, they do discuss his legacy, obviously, but for, you know, such a famous, charismatic figure, I think it was such a wise choice to just downplay his role in this entirely. You know, we get more Bobby, we get you know, more of these other people that kind of somewhat get lost to history, but it's, you know, Jackie's friends, Jackie's confidants. And I think to kind of just to use JFK so little, I think really adds to the success of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Lorraine just understood that Oliver Stone had already made the definitive JFK picture, so he had to make a Jackie one instead. The one of the key lines in this movie is when Greta Gerwig's character is named Nancy is talking to Jackie and calls her, I don't know, Mrs. Kennedy, I guess, and Jackie says, "Nancy, I'm not the first lady anymore, you can call me Jackie." And that's, in a nutshell, what the movie is about, like her coming to terms with being Jackie again, you know, as opposed to Mrs. Kennedy. And you know, just the way that they depict Jackie as a person with all of these real life concerns and these this logical way about thinking about such an illogical place to be in your life. And I came out of Jackie assuming that they cast a JFK impersonator as JFK. And that's not true. And, you know, in hindsight, that it makes sense that they didn't, because it, you know, being an impersonator and looking natural on camera are different talents. But, you know, the one person in this movie that looks so much like like the person that they're portraying is JFK, because they wanted him to sort of be this the person that we already knew. They didn't really want to change anything, you know. This wasn't going to be the new hot takes on JFK's life, you know. They just wanted to show him as the JFK we already knew and have accepted. You know, he's just the film equivalent of the oil portrait of him lining the halls of our memories, you know.
Just not think about him.
Exactly.
Because
where we are in this movie is they want us to think about JFK like Jackie helped make us think of JFK through the actions of this movie and her planning the funeral or whatever. You know, I think that that's one of the ideas that they wanted to subtly get across, is that we think about him this way, we picture him this way, and we're putting that in the movie, but we picture him this way partially because of what Jackie did in the days following his death.
Yeah, we don't see him kind of conflicted or arguing. He's just kind of very placid and just, you know, someone, you know, a myth, just someone in the past, someone who's kind of solidified who they are, even though people think of him still as kind of a complicated person who was thoughtful and things like that. It's, we kind of get this intentionally flat representation of him. And I think exactly. that's as I said, entirely intentional.
Yeah, they smartly understood that he was already the myth of JFK, and nothing they could say in this movie would change that. And also, I don't think they had an interest in trying to change that. You know, so.
Yeah, so how how relatable do you find Jackie in this? I mean, do they humanize her really well? Sometimes just in some of those wider shots when she's walking through the White House, there's a bit of a distance to it. I don't know. She's kind of floats around. I don't know. That might just be me, but she's kind of got this otherworldliness, and maybe part of it is Natalie Portman doing an impression, and Jackie speaks in a very distinct way, and it's a lot different than the way Natalie Portman speaks. I was wondering if that,
or most kind of, humans.
Well, yeah, that's right. If that rings true to you at all, or is that just me?
Well, I think the pointing out the White House, her walking around the White House, I mean, that is supposed to look like a weird scene, and there it's intentional and all those things, but we'll talk about that. But a lot of this movie is about shows Jackie walking aimlessly, you know, like the first shot where we see her in this movie, we talked about the intro with that sort of 10 seconds of music, and then we get this shot of her walking alone at dusk and walking to nowhere in particular. It's just one shot, probably lasts about 5 to 10 seconds, and then we cut to black and we get the title card telling us where we are for the introductory credit scene. And we also see her walk through the hospital after JFK's assassination, just kind of stunned, as she should be. And we get a couple scenes of her walking through the White House, one that day, and then one later, when the scene when she's drinking and listening to Camelot. And this movie, again, like I keep saying the same point over and over again, it is this woman walking in this world, and everything has changed in the world, and she has to sort of figure out her place in it, and all she can do in the meantime is just sort of keep moving until she sort of figures things out. And she doesn't have any answers at this point. She's just walking, you know, because she has to continue to move because she's still alive, but she doesn't know where she's going.
Yeah, and she has, as you said, like she has to move, she has to do something. But there's sort of this futility to it. I mean, she moves, but there's so many people around her kind of getting in her way or not letting her do what she wants. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have obviously the fact that her husband's been assassinated, things aren't going her way, but, you know, just to have the truth about Jack Ruby shooting Oswald being kept from her for a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, which leads to her planning this funeral in a way that she wouldn't had she had all this complete knowledge. You know, there's this notion of her doing things, but kind of just flailing. And you know what I mean? She'll move, but she's not able to progress in the way she wants, but still doesn't know what else there is to do other than try to move on, cement the legacy, protect her children. And it just highlights what a difficult task this is for anybody, but put in this situation, it's so much worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to talk about her graveyard scene? Because I think that's another strong one that I don't think we've mentioned yet.
Yeah, it's great. And like one of the little details I like about it is when the plot is being selected, or the placement of the plot is being selected, the whoever, I don't know what his title would be, but the guy holding the marker for the tombstone places it in the ground, and then Jackie looks at it and changes it maybe by 5 feet, but like it's just still her making you know, painting this picture the way she wants to, you know. And I really enjoyed that little detail, and it's something that you could totally, I mean, you couldn't miss it because it's pretty obvious when it happens, but not think about. But it is just this nice detail that you know, further backs up the idea in this movie that it's just her trying to construct this perfect image, you know, perfect image of, or not perfect, but a legacy for her husband and her family by extension.
Yeah, and I mean, just about what I was saying before too, just to have any agency in this, you know, not to just be this person who's kind of being herded around and saying, this is what you have to do, this is how it's done, even to make a change of 5 feet, but just to kind of assert her agency and to be part of this and to you know, not sit back, to be this damsel in distress and just move out of the way to be to make room for LBJ and whoever's gonna come after her husband's administration to put her foot down in a way and have some kind of control when her life is seriously lacking it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just enjoy the way that that she's sinking into the ground as well, like her shoes. And just the fact that, you know, Jackie Kennedy, notably stylish person, noted for her style, and just the way that sometimes style doesn't always work. You know, you're just you're sinking into the ground a little bit. And also just thematically, it's sort of, is a representation of where she is mentally at the time. You know?
Yeah. I have a question about the end, but I'll save that in case you've got anything else you want to talk about in the meantime.
Well, I mean, one thing that this movie does in general, I kind of wrote about it, is just the idea of, and Jackie Kennedy, when her husband, the sitting president, is assassinated, like, that immediately becomes the defining moment of her life, right? Because it would be the defining moment of anybody's life. There's just nothing, even Jackie Kennedy, who's had lots of different kinds of tragedies in her life, even with that, you would have to be smart enough to know that when JFK dies, like, this is the moment that most people will remember about you. And I just enjoy the way that this movie sort of depicts a sort of like post-climax existence, because you just have to keep living. Like, unless you're going to kill yourself, which this movie addresses suicide, quite frankly, a couple times. And, if you're, other than that, there is no other option but to keep going. And I think the way that the movie addresses that, this sort of impossible, totally unpredictable position you've been put in, where your life is like, feels like it's behind you because nothing could ever top the moment that you have experienced, tragically in this case. I just think that is such an interesting idea to sort of think about. And, the way that this movie depicts that idea through, again, Jackie walking aimlessly throughout the world is really interesting.
Yeah, and the notion of who did it, I mean, we have Lee Harvey Oswald, and, you know, we see him being shot, but there's so little discussion of who it did and how it happened, because, as you said, I mean, the action, the result of it is so big that even something as important as that seems inconsequential to the story you're telling here, because just the gravity of that happening, you can't, you know, you could know everything about it, and it would do so little to explain away your feelings about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the Darren Aronofsky version of this movie look like?
Honestly, I don't think that different.
Yeah?
Like, I think there would be the camera... I don't know, because Aronofsky's coming off of Noah, which is a real wild card in his filmography. But I think I don't know, I think this movie's probably better that Darren Aronofsky didn't direct it, but I also don't think this movie looks drastically different if he did. I think maybe they focus more on the assassination if they did, just because Darren Aronofsky likes to fuck with people, you know, like make them see gross things. Not that this movie totally shies away from it, but I think there's like a dolly into the hole in JFK's head, you know, or something like that.
But yeah.
I don't know. One thing I also really like about the way they set up the interview is that the Crudup interview is
that Crudup's there and he's my boy.
Well, yeah, he's great and everything.
I love the interview scenes. I think are so great in this.
Oh.
It's one of my favorite things going about this movie for sure.
Of course, they're great scenes, and when you think about what the actors have to do to pull them off, it's really impressive because they're shooting that with two cameras with a whiteboard in between each camera, right? So what Billy Crudup is looking at is, and what Natalie Portman is looking at, is a camera and an operator with a whiteboard behind them. And what they're doing is having a conversation with the person behind that whiteboard and also another camera and camera operator, you know, like it seems like, I can't even imagine how they would have reacted when they're told like how they're supposed to, how they have to play these like very intimate conversations that is just, that are two people sitting at a table or at chairs talking to each other, and just how difficult Pavel Lorraine happened to make that for them, you know, and how they still get give really good performances, each of them. But the way that when he first comes to the house, I like the way that their intro is shot. You know, through the doorway, it's still like they're looking at each other and the camera is in between them, but the camera is handheld. You know, it's like things haven't settled in yet. Jackie's explaining that she is going to be editing this interview. Crudup says no, and then he realizes that yes, she is, you know, all that stuff. Like the parameters are being set. And then for the rest of their conversation, it is, or at least until, you know, Billy Crudup calls and files a story. It's this very interrogative shot. These shots, like we said, it's head on from the middle of the conversation, and they are staring at each other like opponents. You know, there's no real human connection to them. They are just opposing forces that each has a reason for having this conversation, but they're not for these real human reasons. It's for this construction sort of reason. Like Crudup has a job and he wants this story, and Jackie has a life that she wants to be remembered in a certain way. And so there's sort of like opposition, and very rarely do we get cuts from, you know, outside of that circle. We get a couple shots when they're sitting at the kitchen table that are over the shoulder of Crudup when Jackie doesn't quite understand what he means, but for the most part we are existing in the middle of this conversation. And then at the very end of the movie, after he's filed this story, is the first time they shoot those two characters like in any other way other than they are the opposition for each other. And what they're talking about in that scene is, it seems like it's the first time they actually like each other, or they've at least started to understand each other a little bit. And it's still simple setups, but they're not looking directly at the camera or looking through the camera at the other person. They're looking at each other off camera on an angle and all these things. And it's just like every other movie would shoot a conversation between two people. But since everything before that has looked like opposition, it gives this really like warm feeling to that conversation. And the way that conversation ends is before Crudup leaves, the way that conversation ends is Jackie talking about how she's worried about how she'll be remembered or if she'll be remembered. And Crudup says something along the lines of they'll remember you. And then we get this cut to the White House tour that's being shot. It's not a cut to the actual footage of the tour. It's a cut to a close-up shot of the camera that is shooting Jackie giving the tour. And it's just like, they'll remember you because of this, because you performed a way in front of the camera that was memorable. You performed this way in front of Billy Crudup that was memorable. And you painted this, again, this oil painting that lines a hallway in such a way that it will be remembered. And I think that's one of the like small moments of comfort that exists in this movie. In a movie about so many sad things, I think there are a couple sort of uplifting moments that exist in the movie, even though I think the conclusion of the movie is kind of definitely a downer, you know. The other element of the conclusion that's slightly uplifting is when John Hurt's talking about how, you know, like, the secret of life is that life is meaningless, and then you wake up and the next morning you make coffee. You know, there's just something keeping you going, right? Again, very, very non-man of the cloth move for the 1960s, but great conversation for a movie in 2016. But like, we get this shot towards the end, and when that conversation happens, it's dusk the conversation between Hurt and Jackie. It's dusk, mirroring Jackie walking at the beginning by herself. It's sort of like the sun is setting on this version of Jackie's life, and she sort of has to go on with the next day, what happens when the sun rises the next day. And then in the middle of that conversation, we get a shot of Jackie with her kids in the same location that she was in the intro shot of the movie. It's still dusk. They probably shot it like directly back to back, and they just show her with her kids, chasing her kids as they're running and playing. And it's just this that's the thing that keeps her waking up. It's just this, there is something to keep you going, you know. And it's just this sort of sliver of optimism that exists in this wholly depressing movie. And I think that is this a really interesting visual way to sort of tie the whole movie together in these very subtle ways, that is visually engaging and thematically interesting, you know?
Yeah, so that does bring me to what I want to ask you about the ending. So when she's leaving the White House for the last time, at least as far as this movie's concerned, and she gets into her car and, she's being driven, and her friend Nancy kind of reminds her to smile the way that she had been telling her to smile during, the White House tour being filmed. And Jackie does kind of manage to smile. I want to know what you thought of that moment, because it seems like it is, as everything's winding down, it is addressing kind of what some of the media angles of this movie, and just how presentation's important, though seemingly no one seems to be around at this moment. What did you make of that sequence?
I think it's partially it's a combination of two things. It's one, Nancy and Jackie are friends, and Jackie kind of did it for Nancy's benefit. And two, Jackie doesn't really have to be in the limelight anymore. I think there is a small portion of her that's like legitimately, ha or at least the way that the movie has painted her, and the way that it's shown how she's uncomfortable on camera through that White House tour. I think there's an element of her that is happy that she can sort of she doesn't have to be in front of the camera all the time anymore, And so I think it's a combination of those two things. And
Yeah, it's
also,
just
I will
relief.
sorry.
Just
Yeah,
relief.
exactly. Despite the fact that relief is just coated in layer and layer layers
Yeah.
and layers of sadness,
Yeah.
And I do enjoy the way that this movie, it's a small thing that exists in the movie, but the way that this movie shows Jackie and Nancy's friendship, I just think that's a small element of this movie that just adds an extra layer to it.
Yeah, and further humanizing someone. I mean, we see them so much in this context of just putting on a show, just so obsessed with how things appear and what you need to look like on television to make sure things are going well, and call it the People's House instead of the White House. All these small, pretty meaningless things, but done for presentation. And then we do get moments of real friendship and camaraderie between them that I think is what you mean, as we watch their relationship develop.
Exactly. Like one of the big appeals of this movie is that it's about a world we will never be in that is sort of treated like how you think like logical people would treat it. It's these moments of things that ring true inside this world that just is so unfathomable to the actual per or to the average person, like living in this world,
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the one of the things I really enjoy about this movie that we haven't really talked about is the way that the White House is portrayed, just as a place, And Jackie talks about it at the beginning that that it's the White House. She thinks it should be this place that has the best artists or the best whatever she is lining these halls with, like
Yeah.
whatever Lincoln things she or Lincoln property she's buying and all this stuff. And she views the White House as this palace, and that is hit pretty hard with the Camelot stuff. But the thing that makes it interesting is the way that this perfect world becomes sort of imperfect, right? And you talked about her walking around the White House, and which we said happens multiple times. It happens when the day of the assassination, when she's in her pink dress, the bloodstained dress. And I think that's awesome because the way that the White House set was made is that they wanted to design the set that could be lit in a way where there were no shadows, and you could shoot the whole thing all at once without changing lighting setups. So what they did was put a bunch of lights above the ceiling of the set, but you can actually see the ceiling in a lot of these shots. So they covered those lights up by putting a thick cotton cloth that worked as like this diffusion. It made the light softer, but also, it illuminated everything in this really sort of soft, bizarre way. And you don't think about it when you're watching it because but there is something sort of that feels wrong about it, about the image, because it's just so pristine. And I think what they do that makes that really interesting is that when she's walking in that bloodstained outfit, she's wearing something with just absolute marks of imperfection of the world. The outside world is imperfect. People get murdered. Even people that live inside this perfect world are not immune. And she's just walking through this perfect place that she is trying to paint or make the way that she wants it to be. But it can't be perfect. And, you know, they double down on that with the later scene when she's walking around drinking and trying on jewelry and dresses. It's all of these beautiful, perfect things that she has in this beautiful, perfect world. But, you're still not protected from imperfection, to put it lightly. Yeah.
Yes. To put it very lightly.
Yeah. And I just think those scenes of her walking around, especially the second one, feel very, very bizarre and like, Eyes Wide Shutty, you know, like following Tom Cruise walking around New York, where he's just like, what am I doing? What is my life? What is this world? You know, it just simultaneously seems stagey and real. And it's very affecting, I find.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I really like the, like I said, how this movie has slight moments of optimism and Jackie running with her kids towards the end, but just like this very, very mild optimism. And this movie does close on something that I think is just sort of just a moment of like kind of sadness and truth and sadness simultaneously, where, you know, Jackie's leaving the White House for the last time and the last time of a meaningful, I don't know if she ever went back, but her meaningful place in it. And she sees these mannequins dressed like her, basically. And she simultaneously sees a version of a life that she thought about. She mentions at one point she thinks she should have been a shop girl, and also the way that her not being a shop girl affected other people and that people are now wanting to dress like she is or she does. And it's just interesting to see a mannequin version of her, you know, like wearing these styles that she could conceivably wear and that were popularized partially because of her. And I don't know, it's just interesting to, in a movie so much about legacy construction, showing something that is done with a version of her legacy as she's leaving the place where she made that legacy. Like, that's just an amazing shot. And there are so many things in this movie that are just gorgeous and wonderful and packed with meaning. And there are some things that are just gorgeous. Like, I mean, we haven't talked about the way that they shoot the assassination. Poor choice of words by using the word shoot. But, that and when they're on the highway driving as fast as they can with that Secret Service agent on the back of the car, like those shots are unbelievable. And also all of the shots that happened at the funeral or the funeral procession and all of these things that are just gorgeous. And but the things that really stick with me from Jackie are these shots that are more packed with meaning, like the mannequin shot. And as that continues, the last sort of scene that we get in this movie is a flashback to Jackie and JFK dancing. Jackie's initially dancing with Bobby, and then JFK comes in and takes Jackie from him to continue dancing. And you know, it's clearly this ball at the White House. These musicians are performing, and what she's saying in this sequence to Hurt is, you know, that I think the people we read about become more real than those who stand beside us, right? And maybe that's what they'll believe, Camelot, just this idea of this fictional kingdom, you know? And we just see JFK and Jackie. The movie closes with them dancing and just sort of like this perfect couple in this perfect place, the perfect castle that is the White House. And even though we have spent the entire 100 minutes of this movie learning that that is just not, that's not a thing that exists. And the very last moment of this movie is Jackie dancing with JFK. And as the movie cuts to black, Jackie like closes her eyes, basically. Like, she's just hugging JFK and they're dancing. She doesn't need her eyes. She closes her eyes and we cut to black, like instantly as she closes her eyes. And it's like, she is doing this dance in a dream world that just can't possibly exist. And the only way it can exist is in her dreams. And I just think that's this amazing, amazing point to close on this movie that is just so filled with things to think about. Even aside from the historical things, it's just the way that it paints the way people think about their own lives, about the world around them. And I just think this movie is just so full of wonderful things. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So it's a farce that Pablo Larraín didn't get nominated for Best Director, but I mean, we'll add it to the long list of Academy Award farces. But yeah, thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men, and check back next week when we'll be talking about something else.